The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Well, now we're joined once again by Professor of Microbial Disease at UCD and Consultant in Infectious Disease at St. Vincent's Hospital, Patrick Mallon. Patrick, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning.
The question of where we should go to from here, because the pictures that we saw at the weekends of the kind of places that on a summer's weekend people would congregate and throng, it seems for Mother's Day they were attempting to do the same with little respect for what we were calling social distancing. What should we do?
So I think it is a concern. It's very clear that even from the statement read out from one of your listeners there recently, that there's a huge number of people around the country that have made extreme sacrifices, and it's not just those of us in healthcare. People around the country that have closed businesses and acted responsibly. A lot of people have lost their jobs, and it is really concerning when you see reports of what happened at the weekend. Now I don't know if it's people maybe misunderstanding the advice that's been given, or if it's people just disregarding the advice that's been given, but it really flies in the face of the sacrifices that the tens of thousands of people around the country are making. And you're right, Pat, it does put everyone at risk. Colleagues in the Infectious Diseases Society of Ireland called for over the weekend was that we would be very welcome of immediate measures to tighten up and enforce the recommendations that the government's already made. So the government have made very clear recommendations. What's needed now, we believe, is legislation or enablers to be provided by the government so that they can actually enforce these recommendations. Now, that can be at a number of different levels. It can be where if you see businesses perhaps acting irresponsibly, that they can be asked to stop that. If you see groups of people gathering together in public areas, that the guards can either enforce limitations on that or can disperse them. But I do think that we need to be much more proactive and aggressive in this regard so that we get the most out of the sacrifices that everyone's making.
Now, Patrick, what do you make of the trend in the numbers? If we go back only to March the 13th, there were 20 cases. One week later, we're talking about every day over 100 new cases, this kind of thing. It's still not exponential. Do we know why? Is it to do with the fact that we're not testing enough people?
There are a lot of reasons that may be, Pat, and it's difficult to know which one is right and which one's wrong. So there is definitely the testing issue. The fact that there are delays in people getting tested and then subsequent delays in the tests actually being run through the lab means that that will have an impact on the accuracy of the numbers that are coming through day by day. The other thing
So when you see, for example, a drop, March 20th, 126, March 21, 102, March 22nd, 121, March 19, though, it was up at 191. So you seem to be seeing a drop, but that is only a drop in the results probably coming through.
It could be, there's two things. It could be a drop in the results coming through. There is a well-known concept that if you have a limited number of tests done every day and the number of tests done every day remains the same, that you will only ever pick up a certain number. So if your capacity isn't there to test more, then you won't detect more. And then the third thing, Pat, is that we may actually be seeing an impact of the measures that the government introduced and the Taoiseach introduced back when he closed the schools and brought in these social distancing measures. And that would be a really good news story. But unfortunately, at the minute, we just can't tell which of the three is happening. What I do know from the clinical end is at the hospital, we are seeing more presentations that are consistent with COVID. We are diagnosing more people that are coming to hospital sick with COVID-related infections. And I know that our experience in St. Vincent's has been like that over the weekend. I talked about it last week, and it's continued. And I know that colleagues in other hospitals are also seeing that trend continue. So I definitely wouldn't look into too much optimism in terms of the national numbers being put out at the minute. And there really is an urgent need for everyone to continue to observe the recommendations coming through from the chief medical officer, that they really need to stay at home where possible and practice this social or physical distance, whatever you want to call it. But everybody needs to buy into this, because this is a really critical week for the country.
In terms of, again, the numbers that are being produced, and this is based on maybe not enough testing, but if you like, the critical thing is the number of people in ICU, because they're the people who are very seriously ill, and we seem to be quite low. Again, as a percentage of all of those who are being diagnosed, we have about a third of people, I think, ending up in hospital, but only a tiny number of those ending up in ICU. Can we explain that?
So we are we're still at the early stages of what I would call this exponential part of the exponential part of the epidemic in Ireland. And we won't really see ICU capacity, I think, being impacted until towards the end of this week or start of next week. So
because
I think
looking
that
at the detail, just to explain why I'm asking the question, on as of midnight Friday, the total number of cases was 712. Total number of those hospitalised, 211, which is under a third. Total number admitted to ICU, only 17. Which would seem to be, you know, a relatively small fraction of even those admitted to hospital.
Which is true. The two things that I would say about the number being admitted to ICU: the number being admitted to ICU is not the total number of people that are critically unwell. When you look at the early stages of a COVID epidemic, as it tends to affect older people first, many of the presentations that we're seeing coming into hospital are actually elderly that may not be appropriate for ICU escalation. And that's a decision that's normally made in conjunction with the individuals and their families when they first present to hospital. So the numbers entering ICU are not the numbers that are critically unwell or the numbers that are dying. So that's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is that the 17, that number, you need to watch that number every day, because we're still at the very early stages of this. And although the numbers are low, and that's really reassuring, and although we have significant capacity within the ICUs, and that's continuing to improve day by day, it is just too early to predict if the flattening of the curve effect is working. And that's why it's really incumbent on everyone this week to really continue to make the sacrifices that they're making, because every single person that practices social difference, that practices the social distancing, you're contributing to less people ending up in our ICUs. And this is really what we would hope to see towards the end of this week, that those numbers stay low.
Some of the questions coming in, Patrick. Can you ask Patrick, please, when will an antibody become available? I think this will be a vital component in the fight against COVID-19 in light of the fact that some people appear to be asymptomatic. Now, we were talking to Luke O'Neill about the extraction of antibodies from people who've successfully combated COVID-19. Is any of that work being done in Ireland?
So there's this concept that if you have the infection and it's a mild infection and you clear it and you get better, that you will mount an antibody response. Now, if you can then take blood from that individual that contains those antibodies and give those blood products to someone who's actually not doing well, someone who's, say, critically unwell, some of us form antibodies that are called neutralizing antibodies. So they're antibodies that actually enable they're actually able to attack viruses and eradicate them. And if that person's blood contains these neutralizing antibodies, that could be a very effective form of therapy. Now, it was used quite a lot in China during the Wuhan outbreak. I haven't seen much published on it, but I do understand that, for example, when the Chinese made a shipment to Italy last week with a lot of medical supplies for Italy, that those medical supplies did include this, what's called convalescent serum. So it's blood from people that have recovered.
Yeah,
it is something that we would have the capacity to do in Ireland. But it's something that would probably need to be mobilized this week. The principal people that could really drive this would be the Blood Transfusion Service, which is based at St. James's Hospital. And I know that there have, and anecdotally, there have been approaches to them about the possibility of doing this in the country.
Because we now have confirmed cases and we have people who are in recovery. How much of a shot of this would you need? I mean, would it be a typical syringe full or what?
It's difficult to know. I don't really know the details of the volumes that are required or how many of the, you know, how many administrations would be required. What usually happens with blood products is that these antibodies or this convalescent serum is distilled from whole blood. So you would get a blood transfusion from an individual or a number of individuals, and what you do is you extract these blood products from them. Obviously, it making sure that the people contributing are still not actively infected and don't have any other infections. And then what you can do is once these blood products are deemed safe to use, you could administer them on a case-by-case basis. But this is something that is incredibly experimental. It's not, as far as I know, in any of the treatment guidelines at the moment. And I think we do need to be careful in general about how we use new medications to treat a new infection, because that we still need to work on the principle that we do not want to do harm to people by using experimental treatments. So these things need to be carefully thought through. But where they could be used, I think we should use them.
Now, a very interesting question from one of our listeners. Could you ask whether a test will show whether you've had the virus or not after you're feeling better? I've been waiting over a week for a test after being unwell for around 2 weeks. I believe I may have had the virus, but since I'm now feeling better, will the test, which I'm due to get, be able to tell either way?
So the test that we do at the moment is called a PCR test, and what that test does is it actually looks for the virus itself. It doesn't look for your body's response to the virus. So if you've had symptoms and you've recovered, that test may be negative. It doesn't mean that you didn't have a COVID-19 infection 4 or 5 days ago. But that is the test that we're currently using in the country.
So now, until we get this so-called the serum test looking for those antibodies, we won't know whether someone who's now feeling great ever had COVID-19.
Exactly. But we are taking steps on a daily basis to explore and introduce what these tests are called, serological tests. These tests that will tell you if you've ever been exposed to these antibodies. There are several that have been developed. We're starting to test ones within UCD alongside St. Vincent's Hospital this week to start that validation process, but that's a research process. As soon as we can identify that one of these tests is actually accurate enough, then that's the test that could actually be fairly widely used to give people, like your listener, the information that they require.
Some suggestions. Get the fire brigade out to hose down groups of people without regard for the pandemic. That's from Wayne the Postie, who's making that suggestion. My daughter lives in Madrid, and when she goes to the grocery store, she carries her passport, her residency permit, in case the police stop her. She also keeps her till receipts, as they can check it to see how long she's been out. So the till receipt says 10:21, and it's now 10:40 or whatever, so she's on the way home from the store, and that's fine. But if it said, you know, 8:40, and it's now 10:40, they might have words with her and presumably fine her. I want you to ask Patrick about the risk of transmission with aerosols in a dental setting.
So again, the Infectious Diseases Society of Ireland over the weekend came out with very clear opinion on this. We believe that any dental procedure that forms an aerosol should be considered a high-risk procedure, and anyone conducting those procedures should do so in full personal protective equipment. In fact, given the fact that we have community spread of this virus at the moment, and we've got a large number of cases circulating in the community, the question needs to be asked as to whether any of these procedures should be being done routinely. You know, it would be my view that to protect our dentists and our dental staff, but also to protect patients that are coming into these dental practices and cycling through these dental practices, You've got to wonder whether we should really be restricting high-risk procedures only to circumstances where it's really needed, like emergency circumstances. And even then, we would recommend that should only be done using full PPE. And there is evidence for this, Pat. If you look at Wuhan and you look around the world, the number of ENT doctors that have become infected with this virus, because ENT is another specialty where they're doing a lot of scopes and people are coughing all over the doctors. A large number of ENT physicians around the world have been infected, and there have been a number of deaths amongst ENT physicians. And I really don't see any difference in terms of what we would recommend to ENT physicians and what we'd recommend to dentists.
Question here. I suppose, sad question. Are elderly people with do not resuscitate orders in place, will they have a choice to stay at home to die if diagnosed with COVID?
So this is a very complicated issue, and the approach that we use is that we look at every single individual as an individual. At the moment, thankfully, in this country, we're not in a position where we need to start making blanket decisions about people's resource status, as they've had to do in Italy and are increasingly having to do in Spain. We work very closely with our colleagues in palliative care and our colleagues that work in elderly care and medicine. And we have guidelines that we have in place at the hospital level so that we all work together in the best interests of an individual. And if it suits an individual and their wishes are that they wish to spend their remaining days within a certain environment, we try our best where possible to try and meet that individual's wishes. But each of these cases, just to emphasize, at the moment, each of these cases are being discussed at an individual level, and in no way have we changed our guidance in terms of how we assess someone's status for resus as a result of this epidemic. And I'd want to reassure your listeners about that.
I'm waiting for a test, but anxious about being contaminated during the testing. Do they change gloves between testing each person?
They do. So the testing hubs that have been set up by the HSE all work off very well standardized protocols, and those protocols are there specifically to avoid spread of the infection. So again, I'd like to reassure your listeners that if they're going to a drive-through testing facility or if they're going to a walk-in testing facility, that all of these facilities work under very stringent protocols, and all areas are usually decontaminated between patients. So if you are invited into an area to get a COVID-19 test, you should go in there under the reassurance that you shouldn't become contaminated. The same thing goes for people that are presenting to hospitals. So we're very clear that when you come to hospital with a suspected COVID illness, we shouldn't be cohorting lots of people together, some of whom we think have COVID and some of whom we think don't. So we try and isolate people at the front entrance to the hospital and keep them isolated until we can determine whether they have or don't have COVID-19 infection. And it's only at that stage that we'll allocate people based on their status as to whether they can reside in hospital with other individuals.
My teenage daughter went jogging with a friend 5 days ago. That friend has now been diagnosed as having COVID. My daughter has no symptoms, but must she still wait 5 days before being tested? She's obviously worried, given her pal has proven positive.
Yeah, so I guess two things there, Pat. We talked a bit last week about this concept of the unit, the family unit. And really what the chief medical officer is encouraging people to do is to remain within that unit. And it really doesn't make sense then to socialize outside that unit. Now, I know it's only a jog and it's a healthy activity, but we should really be, if we're going outside the house, we should really, by and large, try and limit our activity outside the house to those within our immediate family. Because if someone's not in your immediate family, they're not in your unit, and you can't predict what they're doing or what their infection risk is. And this is a very good example of that. Now, if that person has had a close contact, so for example, if they went for a jog and they sat talking for 15, 20 minutes after and they didn't have that 2 meter separation, then that would be considered a close contact. And if you're a close contact, the clear guidance is that you should stay at home. So the guidance, and I think this is really important, the chief medical officer has said that if you have symptoms, you should stay at home. and your close contacts should stay at home. So it's really it's up to everyone to be responsible about that, because we don't want people circulating in the community if they're at risk of transmitting this virus.
Okay. Another one asking about tennis clubs. One club in Munster is closed completely, but others are all busier than ever. Can you pass the virus via the tennis ball? Although you're on other sides of the net, you're picking up the ball, of course, and serving, and then the other person has their turn. They pick up the ball. Can you pick it up in that way?
So I really do not understand why these types of clubs have remained open. Personally, I think it's really irresponsible that we have clubs or locations that people can remain in close contact that are not within their own family hub. And we can talk about where the contact could be, but think about it. If you're in a tennis club, how many people have walked through that door? How many people have pressed the handle of the door? How many people have touched the tennis ball before you have? How many people have touched the surrounding environment before you have? These are the types of multi-use surfaces that can lead to unwanted spread of this virus. And I really don't understand why these clubs are still open. I don't understand why the golf clubs are still open. And it's for this very reason that the Infectious Diseases Society of Ireland have asked for immediate steps, because to me this is just a lack of common sense. These places shouldn't be open, because if they're open, they're breeding virus that's going to lead to more people filling our ICUs.
All right, a final question. And this is an important question, because not everyone has a car. And if you ask a taxi to bring you to Croke Park to be tested or whatever, obviously it's because you're suspected of having the virus, they might not be willing to take you. Can you cycle to a drive-through testing centre?
I cycle everywhere. So if I needed to cycle to a drive-through testing centre, I see no problem with that.
Okay.
And you would still be, in fact, if you're fit enough and well enough to be able to cycle to a drive-through centre, there's probably no need for you even to go into the drive-through centre. They could still
okay.
test you in the car park pad, so I don't see an issue with that.
All right, Luke, thank you very much for joining us, and no doubt we'll be talking again soon. That's Professor of Microbial Disease at UCD and Consultant in Infectious Disease at St. Vincent's Hospital, Professor Patrick Mallon. Thank you very much. Now, with those pictures of people crowding beaches and parks over the weekend, we're going to speak to Irish people living in China, in Spain and Italy about life in lockdown and why social or physical distancing is so important in Ireland right now. Next.